Chapter 15 Notes on Evolution. In the most general sense, what is evolution? A wider meaning of the concept of evolution. Evolution is a process, with selective stages, that results in the evolvement of a system of entities, over a period of time, such as life on Earth, languages, culture, technology, etc. When we hear the word evolution, most of us probably think of Charles Darwin's theory of evolution. However, in the most general sense, evolution has a wider meaning. Evolution is a process where a system consisting of many entities evolves in a series of stages over a period of time. The entities can be plants and animals, words comprising a language, or a set of factors, components, or parts that comprise a single entity or a system. Evolutionary processes contain some type of selection process that rejects or accepts some of the entities that evolved at various stages. This may reduce or eliminate some entities from the system. The rejection of an entity can be immediate, or it can happen over a period of time, as a result of various types of changes that take place over time, such as environmental variations. What is fit or functional at one period of time may not be functional at another. The selection process can be the result of environmental conditions, human selection, or anything else that selects. The period of time involved with an evolutionary process can be days, weeks, years, centuries, thousands of years, millions of years, or longer. Many systems developed in an evolutionary process, besides life, such as languages, culture, and technology. Some examples will clarify this concept. Most languages, including English, developed in an evolutionary process. Modern English was created in a series of stages, over a period of thousands of years. This involved the creation of many words, some of which probably developed by accident, or from the input of other languages. Some of these words were eventually rejected and removed from modern English. Other words were retained, and many were modified as a result of mispronunciations or misspelling. That is, the words that were fittest, or most appropriate and useful for the English-speaking culture survived. Of course, words that were fit or functional at one period of time were not functional at another, and such words are no longer used in commonly spoken English. In English, as is the case in all natural languages, new words are constantly evolving. Some of these words do not become widely used and quickly disappear from the language. Other words become widely accepted, and are considered standard English words. The evolvement of technology. Another example of an evolutionary process was a series of developments in tools and technology that started in the Stone Age with the creation of stone tools and the discovery of fire. These basic developments resulted in a series of further developments, which involved trial and error and a selection process based on utility. This resulted in progressively higher levels of technological development, which provided the tools and resources for even more advanced technological developments. This eventually led to the Bronze Age, Iron Age, and the development and application of machinery in the Industrial Revolution. All of this is an evolutionary process, which eventually led to the evolvement of modern technology, which continues to evolve by the same process to progressively more advanced levels, to the present day. A major component of the technological evolutionary process was, and still is, the progressive development of the ability to manipulate and create very small and very large objects. When this evolutionary process started in the Stone Age, the smallest object that could be manipulated or created was limited by what the human eye could see and what the hands can effectively handle. The largest objects that could be manipulated were probably about the size and weight that one or two men could lift. As time progressed, with the development of progressively more sophisticated tools and techniques, a point was reached in modern times where molecules and atoms can be manipulated and created to varying degrees. The ability to manipulate and create tiny objects has facilitated the evolutionary development of modern computer technology, which originally involved electronic components several inches in length, vacuum tubes, and now it involves microscopic electronic components. The ability to manipulate and create large objects has obviously increased very dramatically, especially since the start of the Industrial Revolution. With the tools that evolved, one person can lift many tons, and a team of people can build gigantic skyscrapers in 2 to 5 years. Cultural evolution in societies. Culture and their related societies also developed in an evolutionary process that generally involved hundreds or thousands of years. However, the most important components of some cultures evolved relatively recently, over the last 100 years. The evolutionary process with culture includes the evolvement of language and technology as discussed above, legal concepts, religion, norms, values, mannerisms, and the philosophy and lifestyle of the members of a cultural group also develop in an evolutionary process. The selection and related evolutionary process involved with cultural evolution is very much influenced by environmental conditions, such as availability of food, water, and various natural resources. The nature of geographical borders enclosing a culture can also be significant. Some borders can easily be transversed by enemies, and some are almost inaccessible. Some borders are also easily accessible to other cultures for trade and a sharing of cultural concepts. Through reasoning, trial and error, with a focus on perceived functionality, various behaviors, beliefs, methods, and other components, are selected or rejected by the society over a period of years. The selection process involved with social and cultural development is imperfect or even dysfunctional, and in most cultural groups and their related society, highly dysfunctional behaviors and beliefs can be found. One of the reasons for this is selection processes are based on perception of utility, which may not always represent true utility. In addition, the perception of people who have more power can have a greater influence on a culture. For example, powerful leaders can facilitate wars, because it may serve utility based on their personal perceptions, and their personal emotional needs in some cases. However, dysfunctional beliefs, behaviors, and customs might eventually be removed from a culture, but this can take many generations. Often, people want to hold on to dysfunctional ways of living and doing things, because they have been exposed to such dysfunctional concepts since childhood. General behavior patterns of the human species are the result of both biological, social and cultural evolution. It is interesting to note that in human societies it is sometimes difficult to distinguish what is the result of biological evolution and what is the result of cultural evolution. Both biological and cultural evolution generally involves a selection process that is ultimately based on survival. This involves selecting traits and behavior patterns that will perpetuate the people in the cultural group. You generally will not find any speculation or disagreement about physiologically based traits, because it is generally accepted that they are the result of biological evolution. However, there might be some question and disagreement about behavior patterns. Are they the result of biological or cultural evolution? Are the various behavior patterns commonly seen in human beings the result of biological evolution or social and cultural evolution? Some individuals look at the instinctive behavior patterns of animals, which most likely developed in a biological evolutionary process. Then they try to find similar behavior patterns in human beings. When they identify similar behavior patterns in animals and humans, their assumption is that the behavior pattern in human beings developed in a biological evolutionary process, just like it did with non-human animals. However, if these behavior patterns are complex, they most likely evolved in a social and cultural evolutionary process, based on utility and survival. For example, some social scientists compare mate selection and mating behaviors in animals with that of human sexual behavior. These are primarily complex behavior patterns, and in human beings, they most likely developed in a cultural evolutionary process. This becomes obvious when individual cultures and individual people are examined. The sexual behavior patterns and mate selection criteria is not identical with all cultures and with all human beings. With non-human animals of the same species, the diversity in this regard is minimal when compared to human beings. Some of the very simple behavior patterns seen in human beings probably did develop in a biological evolutionary process. The sucking response of babies is a good example. It is apparently not the result of culture, because newborn babies and other mammals exhibit the behavior. Various simple movements, especially those exhibited by babies, are probably also the result of biological evolution. Many aspects of our lives develop in an evolutionary process. Our personality and many aspects of our lives also develop in an evolutionary process. Even our level of health and physical fitness can evolve in an evolutionary process. This involves the development of various healthy or unhealthy habits, which evolve over an extended period of time. This involves a selection process that takes place over many years. It involves decision-making on whether or not to engage in, or continue, various healthy and unhealthy behaviors that relate to habit formation. Examples are: should I smoke? Should I continue smoking? Should I exercise? Should I continue exercising? Should I overeat? Should I drink alcohol, get drunk, etc.? This type of decision-making may take place on an unconscious level, without the awareness of consequences or habit formation. Nevertheless, over time it represents a selection process that can lead to an evolutionary development of a healthy or unhealthy body, as well as a healthy or unhealthy lifestyle. A process similar to the above may also result in an evolutionary development of good or poor financial habits, study habits, and general habits that contribute to social functionality and mental health. Thus, it should be apparent from the above that an evolutionary process, or evolutionary development, is not unusual. The evolutionary development of life is just one of many different evolutionary processes. A note on biological evolution and the roles of science and religion. Some people act very adversely to the theory of evolution of life as a result of their religious beliefs. Why are some religious people against the scientific theory of evolution? Some of these people are against teaching evolution in the public schools. These individuals might be confusing the role of science and the role of religion. The important idea to understand is both science and religion are valid concepts, but they have very different purposes and goals. The role of science is to obtain data, information, and related theories that are experimentally verifiable. Information of this nature can be used to create all types of entities, such as a knife, a church, an atomic bomb, a nuclear reactor, a jackhammer, a machine gun, etc. Scientific information is not influenced by beliefs or values, and it does not tell you what you should do and what you should not do. However, when scientific information is applied to a problem or goal, it can tell you how to do something, or how to do what you want to do. For example, with scientific information you can create a high-quality knife. Scientific information can also be used to determine what you can do with the knife, with an assessment of its durability and sharpness in relation to the hardness of various objects. However, the scientific information does not tell you if you should or should not create a knife in the first place, and what you should do with the knife once you created it, such as kill someone, or cut vegetables. To determine whether you should create a knife, and what you should, or should not, do with the knife is not the role of science. It is the role of religion, philosophy, ethics and the law. The idea to keep in mind is the role of religion is the establishment of ethical standards and related behaviors. This can involve preaching, teaching and advocating anything that supports the ethical standards. Most religions have a supernatural or spiritual set of beliefs that ultimately support their ethical standards. From a more scientific perspective, this can be thought of as a set of symbolic representations or symbolism that support their ethical standards. For example, many religions preach or imply that if you engage in evil or destructive behavior, you will eventually receive punishment in hell. This is symbolism that supports ethical standards, and perhaps it also represents the probability of adverse consequences resulting from evil or destructive behavior, such as revenge from injured parties and legal penalties. Problems can arise when people misunderstand the purpose of spiritual belief systems and scientific data, theories and concepts. Many religions have spiritual, or from a more scientific perspective, symbolic beliefs about how life began. These beliefs or symbolism supports their general framework of symbolic beliefs and related ethical standards. That is, beliefs that imply that life was created by an all-powerful entity might be partly based on the concept that the all-powerful entity can monitor your behavior and punish you for any misdeeds. The framework of symbolic beliefs coupled with preaching and organizational structure may also serve social and psychological functions. Religious institutions often raise money for the poor, for scientific research to conquer diseases, and they bring people together in social interactions of various types. They may also provide psychological mechanisms to deal with the adversities of life, such as illness, death, and other misfortunes. It is interesting to note that religious institutions generally use scientific principles when they want to create a church or temple. That is, they do not hire a preacher, they hire an architectural and construction firm that utilizes scientific principles of engineering and related scientific technologies. Religious institutions often support scientific medical treatment in hospitals. They also may provide support for scientific research to find cures for various diseases. They may help with the distribution of the medicines created by science to individuals in the developing countries. The above is not provided by science. Science deals with a search for factual data that can be experimentally verified, and religion deals with the creation and preaching of ethical standards, coupled with various social and psychological functions. If you understand the very different roles and goals of science and religion, it becomes apparent that the concept of science, including the biological evolutionary theory, does not conflict with religion. The idea to keep in mind is, religious concepts are based on guiding ethical behavior, and they do not conflict with the theories and principles of science. A note on modern evolutionary theory. Is modern evolutionary theory the same as Charles Darwin's theory of evolution? The basic principles of Charles Darwin's theory of evolution are included in modern description about the evolutionary process. However, since Charles Darwin wrote his theory in the 1700s, science has made great advances, some of which apply to the evolution of life. This includes advancements in chemistry, such as amino acids formed from inorganic compounds, with electric discharges or ultraviolet light. The most important discoveries for evolutionary science are discoveries in genetics, and the chemicals that are involved with the genetic code DNA and RNA. The most interesting and convincing development in this regard is the deliberate creation of various types of living organisms by means of gene splicing. With gene splicing techniques, cats have been created that emit light, like a jellyfish. That is, these cats glow in the dark. See www.theinternetjournalist.com web link and also sirensspace.blogspot.com web link. A number of types of bacteria have been genetically modified to produce human hormones, such as insulin and human growth hormone. Basically, living things have a genetic code, and if something modifies that code, you may obtain a modified or unique organism that never existed before. Of course, most mutations are dysfunctional, and the organisms that result may not survive or reproduce. The important idea to remember here is science generally develops and progresses in an evolutionary process. Charles Darwin's theory was one of the primary concepts that started an evolutionary process of experimentation and study that led to the modern theory of evolution of life on planet Earth. The new data and experimental evidence from modern science does not contradict Charles Darwin's theory of evolution. The new scientific evidence does greatly advance the theory, and it fills in many gaps that Charles Darwin could not explain. Evolutionary processes and random chance. Introduction. An important concept involved with the evolution of life is random chance. This actually applies to all types of evolutionary systems, to varying degrees, including the evolution of languages, culture, and technology. In this section, I will first explain certain concepts that relate to randomness or chance occurrences. This will be followed by a discussion of chance occurrences and evolution. The relativity of randomness and chance occurrences. What is randomness, and why is it a relative concept? It means an observer cannot predict results or occurrences with certainty. In such a case, the observer might be able to calculate or estimate probabilities. The relativity of the concept of chance can be illustrated with the following examples. Let us assume you are working in a firm that maintains a roster of 100 employees. However, one employee is fired each year and replaced by another worker. You can assume your chance of being fired over the next year is 1 in 100, or 1%. This is based on your imprecise knowledge, which you cannot use to make a perfect prediction. On the other hand, your boss has precise knowledge, and he may have already decided to fire you. From your relative perspective or point of view, the chances of being fired are 1 in 100, and from the boss's perspective, it is certainty. In general, when people estimate or calculate probabilities, they are basing it on their position of observation and/or their knowledge and experience. An individual with one position of observation and/or different knowledge will most likely estimate or calculate a different set of probabilities than another person. Of course, there are many situations where nobody can predict results or outcomes with any certainty. For example, when someone throws dice, nobody can predict the results, but they can calculate probabilities. In science, very often what cannot be predicted at one point in time may become more predictable, or very predictable, with the attainment of more knowledge. Some of the concepts and stages of the evolution of life that from our current perspective are the result of random chance might be perceived differently in the future, with advancements in physics, chemistry, and biology. The development of life evolutionary processes that involve unlikely random chance occurrences that results in one or more self-replicating entities. If one unique self-replicating entity develops by random chance, or by any other method, it may result in very large numbers of the entity, if the environmental conditions are favorable. This concept applies to certain types of molecules and all living entities. However, usually unique entities that are the result of random chance disintegrate or die, and do not reproduce. However, in very large environments, with many chemicals and/or living structures, many unique entities will be produced by random chance, especially over long periods of time. Many of these entities may be extremely unlikely occurrences, especially if the resulting structure has replicating capabilities. Nevertheless, such structures are very likely to occur when you are dealing with huge numbers of molecules and/or very large numbers of living entities. These probabilities are greatly increased as time proceeds. In the case of evolution of life on Earth, the number of entities involved is astronomically large, and the time interval is about 4 billion years. A note on the stages involved with the evolutionary development of life. It is important to note that the precise stages or sequences involved with the evolutionary process that led to the development of life cannot be absolutely determined. There can be differing opinions about the exact steps and sequences involved with the various evolutionary stages. Thus, different sources might present a somewhat different sequence than other sources. In this book, I present more than one possible step for some of the sequences. The above raises the question: can evolutionary theory be confirmed experimentally, with the goal of determining the precise set of sequences that resulted in life? The answer is: it is possible to set up enclosed environments with chemicals and observe a chemical evolutionary process that starts from inorganic compounds and evolves into amino acids and polypeptides, which may eventually form proteins. It is also possible to set up controlled environments that involve microorganisms and expose them to various selective pressures, which will often result in organisms resistant to the selective pressures. The selective pressures can be competition from other microorganisms, antibiotics, a shortage of a nutrient, excessive quantities of a nutrient, high quantities of oxygen, a deficiency of or no oxygen, high or low temperatures, and many other factors. It is also possible to carry out experiments similar to this with higher plants, animals, and fungi. However, evolutionary steps that are revealed with experiments of this nature will only suggest possibilities. Such experiments are likely to reveal multiple possibilities. For example, amino acids and polypeptides can evolve from exposing a mixture of appropriate gases to ultraviolet light, as well as electric sparks that simulate lightning. Thus, these experiments do not determine whether ultraviolet from the sun, or lightning, or both, or some other source of energy, was the form of energy that ultimately started the evolutionary process of life. Nevertheless, laboratory experiments involving the possible evolutionary stages of development can provide very useful and interesting possibilities of how life began on our planet. Notes on exothermic and endothermic chemical reactions in relation to the development of life on Earth. Introduction: before life could develop on planet Earth, the chemicals needed for life had to evolve. This involved many exothermic and endothermic reactions. In this section, I will define and explain some of the principles that relate to exothermic and endothermic reactions. This discussion is primarily focused on chemistry, which will be helpful in understanding the early stages of evolution of life. Note on the terminology exothermic reactions and endothermic reactions in the following discussion. Exothermic reactions refer to chemical reactions that release energy. In this discussion, endothermic reactions refers to chemical reactions that require an input of energy for the reaction to take place. Under certain conditions, exothermic reactions require a momentary input of some energy to initiate the reaction, such as a tiny flame from a match to light a stove or burn garbage. However, with an endothermic reaction, the input of energy must be continuous for the reaction to continue. That is, when the input of energy stops, the endothermic reaction will also stop. A note on exothermic reactions and the evolvement of the basic inorganic chemicals needed for life. One of the main inhibiting factors of exothermic reactions is the energy state of the environment, especially in terms of temperature. If the temperature is excessively high, these reactions generally will not take place. For example, hydrogen and oxygen will not react to form water if the temperature is very high, such as 10,000 centigrade. The reason for this is the oxygen and hydrogen atoms have too much energy to form water. At 10,000 C, water will decompose into hydrogen and oxygen, because the molecular bonds are broken by the high temperature. However, if the temperature is lowered, as happened in the early period of our solar system and Earth, water will form, initially in the form of steam, and as the temperature lowers further, liquid water will form. The same principle applies to the exothermic reactions that resulted in the formation of other compounds needed for life, such as sodium chloride and potassium chloride. Low temperatures can also inhibit or prevent exothermic reactions from taking place. For example, hydrogen and oxygen will not react to form water if the temperature is low enough to freeze the hydrogen and oxygen to a solid state. However, if there is a small flame, it can start the reaction by converting a small quantity of the solids to hot gases, which will react to produce heat. The reaction will continue if this heat is sufficient to convert the remaining solids into gases that are hot enough to react. A note on different types of endothermic reactions require different types of energy. Endothermic reactions generally require a specific type of energy. For example, if you expose a mixture of water, methane, ammonia, hydrogen, to heat under ordinary atmospheric conditions, you will not obtain amino acids. The same is true if you expose the mixture of gases to visible light or infrared, both of which are forms of energy. To obtain amino acids from these mixtures of gases, it is necessary to use the right type of energy, which is pulsating electric discharges, electric sparks that simulate lightning. See the Miller-Urey experiment at www.juliantrubin.com web link. Another example of an endothermic reaction is photosynthesis, which requires the input of visible light, such as from the sun. You cannot use other forms of energy, such as heat or infrared, for photosynthesis. The idea to keep in mind is each type of endothermic reaction requires a specific type of energy. However, there are some cases where more than one possible type of energy can be used. A note on energy density and exothermic reactions. Another very important concept in regards to exothermic reactions is energy density. Different types of endothermic reactions require different energy densities. For example, if you continuously expose a mixture of water, methane, ammonia, and hydrogen to very intense electric sparks of 100,000 watts, you will not get a mixture of amino acids because the energy density would be too great. Instead of amino acids, you would get a mixture of hot gases. To obtain amino acids with these gases, you would have to have an energy density low enough to permit the chemical bonds to form. Such an energy density would not raise the temperature to the point where amino acids decompose. See the Miller-Urey experiment at www.juliantrubin.com web link. The first stage in the evolutionary process of life, chemical evolution, involving exothermic and endothermic reactions. The first step of chemical evolution, the creation of basic chemical compounds from natural elements involving exothermic reactions. The first step in the evolutionary process involved the formation of simple chemicals from fundamental elements, such as carbon, hydrogen, nitrogen, oxygen, sodium, potassium, chlorine, sulfur, phosphorus, etc. Many of the reactions that formed the simple chemical compounds took place when the Earth first evolved from hot gases and molten material. As this material cooled, spontaneous reactions, or exothermic reactions, took place that formed various chemicals, such as sodium chloride, potassium chloride, and water, and many other simple compounds needed for life. These reactions are exothermic. They release energy. There is no mystery involved with these reactions, because they can be easily carried out in the laboratory. For example, chlorine gas will react with sodium to form sodium chloride, and hydrogen will react with oxygen to form water, in the laboratory, or anywhere else where the environmental conditions are suitable. The second step of chemical evolution, the creation of amino acids in endothermic reactions, which led to the development of polypeptides and proteins in addition to the simple compounds discussed above. Complex chemical reactions took place in the evolutionary process that led to life. These more complex reactions required an input of energy. These are endothermic reactions. See the definitions above, in the notes on exothermic and endothermic reactions. The amino acids, presumably, reacted to form polypeptides, and eventually proteins. The question arises, where did the energy come from for the endothermic reactions mentioned above? The most likely sources of energy that created the amino acids is ultraviolet from the sun, electrical pulses from lightning, and possibly radiation from rocks. There are many other ways that the organic chemicals needed for life could have been created. Keep in mind that the above, as well as most of the details of evolutionary theory, is speculation or educated guesses. Amino acids, polypeptides, proteins, and the other organic chemicals needed for life could have evolved many other ways. For example, the rocks, soil, clay, and/or various minerals in the natural environment could have acted as catalysts in various ways to create the chemicals needed for life. The accumulation of organic chemicals in the early environment that existed on Earth, before life began, amino acids, polypeptides, proteins, and other organic chemicals could not decay, because the decaying process involves live microorganisms. These chemicals could change to more complex chemicals, or they can decompose because of the energy state of the environment, but this process takes place very slowly. Thus, it is likely that various types of amino acids, polypeptides, and proteins, and other organic compounds accumulated in streams, rivers, and oceans. Most likely, many other chemicals besides amino acids and proteins were created in the pre-life period of our planet. That is, in a huge environment, with a huge amount of inorganic chemicals, and many different types of energy, and a huge variety of potential catalysts, a large number of chemical reactions will most likely take place. This may have formed many of the other organic chemicals needed for life. For example, fats, carbohydrates, and even a simple form of DNA may have been created. The second stage of evolutionary development of life, the evolvement of prokaryotes. A note on the evolvement of the first living entities from chemicals. Much of the following discussion is speculation, because it deals with the formation of bacteria from chemicals. To date, no one has created bacteria from chemicals in the laboratory. Possibly, sometime in the future, a set of chemical sequences will be worked out that result in the development of a simple bacterium. However, bacteria are more than complex molecules, or structures composed of molecules. In spite of the fact that bacteria are the simplest life forms, they are quite complex. They take in substances from their environment, consume energy, grow and reproduce. The development of the first living entity might have been the result of random chance. The chemical sequences that led to the evolvement of the first bacteria, and probably also the first DNA-like structures, may have been partly the result of random chance. However, certain varieties of archaea that do not need organic compounds from the environment might have evolved before bacteria. A mixture of chemicals, exposed to energy of varying types, will generally respond in predictable ways, at least in terms of a mass of billions of molecules. However, individual molecules can interact in unusual ways as a result of random chance. Random chance occurrences increase as the number of entities increases. If a molecular-based random chance interaction results in a reaction that produces one molecule, or structure, that has self-replicating properties, it might duplicate to billions in a relatively short period of time. One or more reactions of this type may have led to the formation of the first living entities on our planet. Keep in mind that one bacterium can grow and reproduce billions of bacteria in a very short period of time. The evolution of nucleic acid over time, the streams, lakes, rivers and oceans probably contain a rich mixture of the chemicals needed to form life, such as amino acids, polypeptides, lipoids, sugars, and many other compounds. This mixture probably eventually forms some relatively large molecules such as nucleic acids. DNA may have evolved before there were any true life forms on our planet. The first DNA was probably in a very primitive and simple form. Under the right conditions, DNA segments can replicate to form many similar segments. This may have happened in certain locations on our planet before the first living entities developed. Possibly a very large number of variations of simple DNA-like molecules formed, some of which form very large molecular structures. Most of these nucleic acid structures probably had no significance as far as the development of life is concerned. However, because of the huge number of such structures, one or more may have evolved by random chance to a molecular structure that bond to specific amino acids. This may have formed a membrane-like enclosure over the DNA. This might have been more or less a molecular structure consisting of amino acids bound to the DNA. The amino acids that were molecularly bound to the DNA may have formed a protein structure that surrounded the DNA. This molecular structure is similar to a virus, but it cannot be classified as a virus, because viruses by definition infect living cells, and at this point in time there was no life. However, the fact that there are viruses that have this type of molecular structure is proof that the structure described above is possible, at least from the perspective of chemistry. In a few of these structures, the membrane-like coating over the DNA may have been modified by random chance in such a way that it chemically bound to lipoids in the surrounding environment, forming a membrane enclosure that is more or less similar to the cell membranes of bacteria. Over time, a huge number of these structures may have formed, most of which probably had no significance as far as the development of life is concerned. However, one or more of these structures may have evolved by random chance in such a way that it continuously absorbed amino acids, lipoids, and other chemicals from the environment, which led to an increase in mass and size. This process can involve molecular and/or electrostatic attractions of the amino acids, lipoids, and other chemicals that cause the growth of the structure. The increase in size of these membrane-covered DNA structures ultimately caused them to split into two segments. The two resulting structures probably also continued to absorb amino acids and other chemicals from the environment, which resulted in repeated divisions. This may have resulted in a huge number of these structures. These structures probably evolved into more complex forms over time, which essentially were simple bacteria eukaryotes. The first bacteria that evolved probably had a huge amount of food in their environment, as a result of the amino acids, polypeptides, and proteins, and other organic compounds that accumulated in the streams, rivers, and oceans. As a result of the huge amount of food, the bacteria increased to huge quantities. This ultimately led to the reduction and eventually the elimination of the food supply. As a result, prokaryotes with the ability to capture energy from the sun evolved. This process involves photosynthesis, and it can be seen in blue-green algae cyanobacteria to the present day. The blue-green algae evolved into other species of photosynthetic bacteria. Some of the variations of cyanobacteria might have evolved into higher forms of algae, all of which eventually increased the quantity of oxygen in the atmosphere. In addition to the above, some bacteria developed that can live off inorganic compounds released from the Earth's crust. This includes hydrogen sulfide. The energy is produced by the reaction of hydrogen sulfide with other compounds. There are also bacteria that live off sulfur. These bacteria do not live off pre-existing amino acids, proteins, or carbohydrates. They form their own amino acids and protein structures from the basic compounds in their environment. Did the evolvement of one living cell produce all living things on Earth? Many people believe that all life on our planet was ultimately developed from a single cell that reproduced by binary fission, and the resulting cells eventually mutated into progressively higher forms of life. There are some good arguments for this theory. For example, all cells contain DNA, and they have many chemical mechanisms in common. However, there are other possibilities. The fact that there are many similarities between cells of different types can be the result of physics, chemistry, and similar environmental conditions, and not a single parent cell forming all life. The principle here is similar structures are often produced in nature as a result of the laws of chemistry and physics and environmental conditions. For example, there are a huge number of molecules, independent of life forms, on our planet, some of which have very complex structures. These complex structures form under natural conditions. These chemicals can be produced in the laboratory. Even complex amino acids, polypeptides and proteins can be formed in the laboratory. These reactions will generally produce the same molecules, with the same structure, any place that has suitable environmental conditions, and the needed basic chemicals. Of course, even the simplest bacteria is far more complex than just about any molecule. However, this does not imply that similar bacterial structures could not develop in different locations on our planet, independent of each other. It is even quite possible that life developed on our planet from the interaction of many bacteria-like structures that were different structurally, and even chemically. However, some of these primitive life forms may have interacted physically to ultimately form one or more cells, that reproduced, and mutated over time to form most or all living things on Earth. Keep in mind that all of this is speculation. The third stage in the evolution of life evolvement of eukaryote. A note on the possibilities of how eukaryote evolved. Nobody knows for certain exactly how eukaryotes evolved, but they may have evolved from prokaryotes. However, some might argue that because of the great differences between the structure and reproductive mechanism between eukaryote and prokaryotes that they evolved separately. Prokaryotes have a relatively simple replicating mechanism consisting of DNA that is not bound in an organelle. Eukaryotes have DNA, RNA, and tRNA, and a nucleus, and various organelles. However, in the following paragraphs I am going to discuss the possible sequence of how eukaryote might have evolved from prokaryotes. Eukaryotes and one possibility of how they may have evolved. Eukaryotes might have evolved as a result of smaller prokaryotes incorporating themselves into the cytoplasm of larger prokaryotes. From this perspective, the smaller prokaryotes eventually evolved into the organelles found in eukaryotes. The best evidence for this possibility is seen with certain organelles that have their own DNA, and they reproduce inside the eukaryotes, such as mitochondria and chloroplasts. This more or less resembles a symbiotic relationship. However, the organelles are of course not true independent organisms, as they now exist in eukaryotic cells, and they cannot live and reproduce outside of the cells in the natural environment. All of the organelles in eukaryotes do not have their own DNA. Organelles that do not have their own DNA probably evolved inside the cell as a result of mutations in the genetic code contained in the DNA in the nucleus. Probably the first eukaryotes were very simple single-celled organisms. These simple cells may have evolved into various types of simple single-celled algae, protozoa, and fungi. A note on viruses and evolution. What are viruses? Are they living or non-living entities? Viruses are not classified as living entities by most sources. However, they are the result of evolution, and they do share some of the properties of living things. That is, viruses contain nucleic acid, and when they infect cells they reproduce, and also usually destroy the cell. In this regard, they are similar to infectious bacteria. However, viruses cannot reproduce outside of the cell. Viruses are in a certain sense very large molecules, and some viruses have been crystallized in a way that is similar to a chemical. Viruses often consist of a DNA or RNA segment, which may or may not have a protein cover molecularly bound to it. This description actually does fit the definition of a molecule quite closely. The evolvement of viruses. The first viruses may have evolved from DNA or RNA segments. These nucleic acid segments may have evolved from a chemical evolutionary process and/or from the nucleic acid in prokaryotic and eukaryotic cells. How do viruses reproduce? Generally, viruses take control of the nucleic acid mechanisms in the nucleus, and they use the cell as an enclosure to reproduce in. To do this, a virus must have a DNA or RNA configuration, or genetic code, that is appropriate for the cells that they infect. Because of this, some viruses can infect certain cells, or one species of organism, or a few species, and they might be totally harmless to other living entities. In a sense, a virus must have a genetic code that is in sync with the genetic code of the cells they infect. This might suggest that some viruses may have evolved from mutations of the DNA or RNA of the species of cells they infect. New strains of viruses and their evolvement. New viruses appear to be evolving on an ongoing basis, fairly rapidly. It is clear that most of these viruses evolved from other viruses. This raises a question: are there any viruses in modern times that evolved from entities other than viruses, such as the DNA or RNA from animals? This is possible, but I know of no sources that confirm this experimentally. Viruses might have had a role in evolution of living things by delivering segments of genetic code, nucleic acid segments that cause mutations. Viruses might have had a major role in the evolutionary process of prokaryotic and eukaryotic cells, including the higher fungi, plants and animals. Viruses have the ability to deliver genetic material into a cell. Of course, this genetic material is usually destructive to the cell. Perhaps in certain cases, the genetic code delivered by viruses in the natural environment does not destroy the cell, and it may result in a mutation that may or may not be viable. The above theory is suggested by experiments and genetic engineering methods that use viruses to create mutations. This involves modifying the genetic code of a virus in such a way that it delivers specific genetic information into a cell. This can involve obtaining precise genetic segments from one type of cell and delivering it to another type of cell. Much of this is still in the experimental stages. Of course, the above does not prove that viruses can cause viable mutations in the natural environment, but it certainly suggests the possibility. Does evolution continue to the present day? Does evolution of plants and animals continue to the present day? Question: does evolution continue to the present day, or has it stopped? The answer is yes, it continues. Animals are continuously faced with challenges from their environment, and only those that are adequately fit for the environmental conditions survive and reproduce. Many of the environmental challenges that animals face in modern times is the result of industrialization. This results in the reduction of wilderness areas and environmental pollution. These conditions have eliminated some species, and probably will continue to eliminate other species. However, this may provide the opportunity for other species to evolve that can function successfully in the environment created by industrialization. For example, rats, cockroaches, and pigeons appear to do very well in the polluted industrialized environment created by humans. Are human beings still involved in the evolutionary process? Or has evolution stopped for the human race? Many of us might prefer to think that human beings are the culmination of evolution, and no other life form can be as smart and powerful as humans. Many of us believe that the struggle for survival does not exist in modern society. They may believe that the natural selection process has stopped. However, I am going to present a different perspective. It is true that many of the survival challenges found in the natural environment, the wilderness, do not apply to life in the developed nations. However, society places a significant survival challenge on its members. Some people are successful, reach high levels of social status, and are wealthy. They probably have a survival advantage, and their offspring probably have a significant survival advantage as well. People that are less financially successful, or poor, but have good family values, and raise many children, also may have some evolutionary advantage. Our society favors certain characteristics that may also result in evolutionary change. For example, people that are intelligent, attractive, tall, strong, and are not excessively temperamental, probably have a survival advantage from an evolutionary perspective, as a result of the selective pressures of modern society.